Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
And Mountain Dews and Tony McCoy now launching a tremendous attack on the outside. He's done it! What a hero! What a sportsman! What a jockey!
Townsend right in there. Houghton also making his presence felt. There's his shot!
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, a very busy show this morning as always in a moment as he previewing to our very own Ken Doherty. In racing, we'll hear from George McDonagh, a racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host as he previews this weekend's racings and shares his lucky 15 with us. In GAA, well, there's a small matter of the All-Ireland final between Mayo and Tyrone taking place a little bit later on. I know our producer here, Jane McNamara, is already climbing the walls with anticipation, shouting for the green and red of Mayo. And we'll be talking to Declan Drake about that as well. And also previewing the start of the Dublin Senior Football Championship. In football, we'll have Alan Cawley talking about the League of Ireland action last week. We'll catch up with him as well about the performances of the Irish team, which were quite brilliant in my opinion, as well as the Premier League. In golf, we'll be talking to Deirdre Smith about the wonderful, wonderful performance of Leona Maguire as they captured the Solheim Cup during the week. And we'll also talk about Shane Lowry, who's going well and making a very, very strong bid for his place in the Ryder Cup team for Pádraig Harrington. In the NFL, we'll be thrilled to be joined by Stephen O'Brien as well from the UK and Irish Packers, who'll talk us through the new season, which started on Thursday. As usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. WhatsApp is 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport. Okay, as I said in the intro there, it's time to talk to our own Ken now. Morning, Ken, how are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. Great to chat with you. I missed you last week. I was I was saying my prayers. We had communion for Charlie last week, so it was a busy day.
Oh, very nice.
All went well. Lovely day, actually. Nice to be able to...
Where was it?
It was on out in... we did a joint one with the local parish in Kilcool, so there was... It was supposed to be out in the field originally, but they managed to bring it indoors with the new announcement. So we were lucky in that sense. So we weren't quite like John the Baptist out in the field and getting back with nature. But it was a great day, lovely day, and good to be back in here chatting to you all. I was just listening on the way in as well, and the radio, of course, 20 years, the commemorations are all beginning.
20 years
since the 9/11 and the atrocities. We had a thinking about it as I was coming in. I remember it so well. I'm sure you do too, but I remember it so well.
Yeah.
I was at home. We had a game that night. We were playing Pontypridd in Donnybrook. That was what was the fixture. And I got a phone call from Victor Costello, and he just said to me, "What are you doing?" And it was in the afternoon. He said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm just getting a few bits ready, you know, the usual. What are you at?" And
he said,
Turn on the telly. And I turned it on, and one of the towers was smoke billowing out of it, and just in time to see the second plane hit. And it was just the weirdest sensation in the world. And like everybody else, you know, of a certain generation, you'll never forget where you were when it happened. We went on and we played that match that night. We didn't... I never forget, Ken, it was... I don't know what your feelings on it were, but it was the scariest... It was one of the scariest things I've ever experienced, because it really felt like World War III was happening. We went into Donnybrook and I was captain, and we were like, are we going to bother with this match, or will we cancel it? What do we do? You know, do we lock everything down? And of course, no one had a clue. So they went on and they played the match, but then, of course, within 24 hours, the world shut down and all sports events were cancelled.
Yeah.
We won the match. We beat Donnybrook.
Well, believe it or not, I was playing that night with Jimmy White in an exhibition in Cork, and we'd stopped off on the way into a golf club for a bit of lunch, and we were watching it on the TV live as it happened, like, you know. And I'd been up, and I'm sure you were probably, I mean, you've been to New York a few times, and I'd been up the World Trade Center a couple of times, you know, once with my good old pal Mick McLean, and it was just, it was a terrible, it was very, very, you know, shocking. We thought, like, at the time, it might have been some sort of a movie or something like that, because that's what it looked like. And but when you realise it was reality, and looking back now, I'm watching some stuff on Netflix and that Turning Point, the documentary about it, and it's just absolutely shocking, you know, really, what happened to all those firefighters and, you know, first responders in New York, you know, it's just, I think almost like, was it almost 400 responders, like, died in the terrorists. They were going up when the fire, you know, it was just very, 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 very
Irish, you know. I
mean, yeah, of course, yeah.
Huge thing. But then when the planes started to hit around the rest of America as well, and the Pentagon and everything else, it was that surreal moment of, is this the start of a world war? Are we?
Yeah.
Very, very scary times. It really was. But
anyway,
there'll be a lot of celebrations of life and memory of the people who were gave their lives, the firefighters and everybody else that tried so hard to save lives over there. 20 years, it's just, it has
20 years on. It sounds quite incredible. Yeah, well, the first time I was ever in New York was 1994 at the World Cup to watch Ireland play
Italy.
Stadium. That was the first time I was ever there. And of course, I went up to the World Trade Center as a, you know, for one of the days, and the Empire State Building did the whole tour, you know. Yeah, that was the very first time I was there in 1994, watching Ray Houghton score that wonderful goal against Italy in the joint stadium, those years ago.
Well, funnily enough,
it only seems like yesterday.
I know, it does. And funnily enough, we went over, a gang of us, we won the Triple Crown in 2003-04 season, and we went over there after it all to kind of have a bit of a celebration. It was myself and Glenn Horgan and Victor Costlon and Brian Driscoll, Dennis Hickey. A gang of us went over to New York for 4 or 5 days. But I remember going down to Ground Zero and going down, you know, this is like 3 years on. And it was still just a mass of rubble and destruction.
Yeah, yeah.
3 years. They said the fires burned for 100 days afterwards. Anyway,
I'm sure Jane's fires are still born in Mayo and Tyrone.
She certainly is. Yeah, she's absolutely up the walls here. Still not happy. She hasn't got a ticket yet. She managed to get one ticket for her mother. Still no ticket. They're hard to get. She actually went out and caught up with a few people out on the street talking about that. Let's have a listen to what she caught up on.
Okay.
I would say Mayo because I know the long-standing desire of Mayo to just do it.
Well, Mayo have been knocking on the door for so long. Andy Moran says they're going to win. They must win.
Tyrone. It's sort of amusing to see Mayo continuously lose.
Tyrone, because I want him to. I don't like Mayo. It's Mayo's for Sambo's.
Yeah, I'm hoping Mayo. I think we failed them. We owed them in All Ireland.
I would like to see Tyrone win. Keep Mayo hungry.
Tyrone are a very tough footballing team, and they're going to be hard to break down for sure. They're going to be a tough team to beat.
I want Mayo to win because they deserve at this point. Like, they've been in so many finals in the last couple of years, and they've been really unlucky.
My Croatian friend says it's about time Mayo is going to win. I think they're the better team, and they should win. They played the better football.
I think Mayo are going to win, and they just absolutely deserve to win at this stage.
Even though they robbed Dublin in the semi-final.
I predict Mayo to be winning at half-time as per usual, and then to lose the match to Tyrone.
Mayo's final was beating Dublin. Fair play to them, but they won't beat Tyrone.
Mayo only scored 9 points with extra time in the second half against a tiring, aging Dublin team. They're going to get trashed.
Mayo for Sambo. That's the one. That's the line.
Mayo for Sambo.
I have to keep reminding her of that. I don't know if I'd agree with some of the sentiment in there. Thrashing the Dubs and an aging team and all that kind of stuff. None of that is true. They deserved their win. What way do you see it going?
Listen, I think it's going to be a very close game. But I think I hope Mayo win, to be honest. You know? I hope it's going to be a great game. But, you know, Tyrone have won it before. Mayo haven't won it for 70 years now, is it?
Yeah.
And, it would be nice just to see them win, you know, it really would. They've been knocking on the door for so long. They'll be playing against the great Dublin teams. And they got that victory in a wonderful victory in the semi-final. And I they deserve to win it, you know, for get their name on.
I agree. Like, I mean, 71 or 70 years or whatever it is since they've won it. And I said that to my mother during the week on Thursday night. I said that to her and she looked at me. I swear, a Galway woman, if looks could kill. She was like, no, I can't actually. She said, I know I should, but I can't. I can't actually admit that I want Mayo to win. So there's still that rivalry there. But I just think they deserve it at this stage. They've come so close. They've been through so much hardship. And they've beaten the Dubs to get there. It just feels like it's deserved of them to win it, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that, you know, the four, as we said about the Forest, you know, the Forest are born in strongly with Mayo. You know, they're on a mission almost. You know, the way they played in that second half was, like, just incredible, wasn't it? You know what I mean? They were so far behind, but they really sort of dug in and they sort of broke Dublin, like, completely, you know? And it was... But listen, we were writing off Tyrone. I was writing them off. I thought Kerry were certainly there. It looked like they might be given a walkover at one stage in the semi-final and now they're in the final. I mean, you can never count off Tyrone or any of the teams... sort of in the six counties, like, you know, they produced some great teams over the years. And Tyrone are as tough as all boots, you know. They're going to be so hard to break down, but it's going to be a cracking final.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be so physical as well. I mean, Tyrone, they bring an edge to them, you know.
You might look
at the Dubs and you might think they might play with a bit more, I don't know, flair, skill, maybe the same with Kerry, but the Tyrone lads bring this edge to it, and Kerry better be prepared for that. It's going to be one of the most physical battles, you know. So Mayo really need to be ready for that to come at them.
Oh, absolutely.
So, like you said, it's going to be a cracker of a match. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal. Yeah. I think it's going to be quite close, you know. I mean, the guy said there, you know, Mayo to lead at half time, but Tyrone to win it in full time. I think it's going to be the other way around, you know. I think Mayo are going to be stronger in the second half. But I think it's going to be very, very, very close, you know, very, very close. I'm looking forward. I can't wait, you know.
Can't wait either.
But it's not there, though. It's Ronaldo Day. I just want to get that.
I'll get to Ronaldo in a minute. Before we get to Ronaldo, well, it's sort of getting to him. He broke our hearts in that Irish match. You know, I have to say,
wasn't it?
I was so unfortunate. But I have to say, Ken, I haven't enjoyed Irish football as much in years as I have for the last week and a bit. You know, sitting at home with the kids, watching those matches, and watching the young team that Stephen has picked, and the quality of those players coming through, the likes of Bazuno just making an absolute name for himself. The quality of football that they're playing. I mean, and I don't understand. I'm still hearing people giving out about them and saying, you know, this and that, and we're not winning anything. And where's like we were unbelievably unlucky against Portugal. I mean, you can blame everything.
Yeah,
we just got unlucky in the end. Okay, Azerbaijan, you could argue we should have won that game, but then again, they weren't bad either. But it was a great result the other night against Serbia, and it was an own goal, but it came from the pressure. It was a brilliant result.
Yeah.
Like, I love those games. I think Ireland are playing the best we've seen for years.
They're playing really good football, you know, and I don't think we were unlucky against Portugal. I actually think the referee robbed us of a victory, to be honest, you know. I think he was very favourable towards Portugal. I mean, we should have had a penalty. He didn't even look at it, like, at one side. You know, the bar didn't even look at it when we were 1-0 up. Could have had a penalty there, you know, and that really sort of changed the dynamics of the game as well. Okay, and even Ronaldo's winner, you know, I mean, it came at almost 6 minutes when he should have only played five, you know. I mean, that shouldn't have been allowed, you know. So I think we were very, very unlucky. I mean, you saw the guys, they fell to their feet at the end. Ronaldo was fantastic. Don't get me wrong. The two headers were just sensational, you know. But I think they were absolutely robbed, you know. And as I said, I thought the referee was very favourable towards Portugal. But I totally agree with you. You can see the green shoots of recovery for Ireland, Stephen Kenny, and what he's trying to get across, you know. And don't forget, I mean, you look at that squad. I mean, many players are in the Premiership, you know. You look at, you know, the quality that he has to pick from. But I tell you what he has. They had a great team effort,
attitude,
you know, and camaraderie and attitude. Yeah, you know what I mean? And that was so good to see, you know.
Their attitude was
amazing. And some great new stars in there as well. Young stars. you know, the goalkeeper was you know, saving the free, saving the penalty. You know, I mean, they're like just so many positives from it, but so unlucky, you know, at the end of the day, you know, to lose.
I just don't get the people and the pundits that are calling for a change. Like, I mean,
I don't
think you could bring in anyone better.
There's always going to be people like that, isn't there? You know, in all fairness, you know, there's always going to be people. And, you know, when Ronaldo pulled the short off, remind me of you, Reggie, you know, back in the day.
I know, that six pack of mine, yeah. I love that memory myself, indeed. I see that every morning, Ken. You don't. I see that every morning when I look in the mirror. That's lucky, mate.
You have a 12-pack. You have a 12-pack, Reggie. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, your 12-pack is in the fridge, you know?
Exactly, exactly. But, no, I tell you, Kenny, all the way for me, the grudgers can take a walk. We stick with these lads, with this team, stick with the program. And, you know, I heard it said by a couple of things. Let's put it put a realistic view on this as well. As you said, with what we have to choose from, the players that he has available to them, the way that they fight, I don't care about, you know, well, obviously I care about results, but I don't care about it to the level that I care about how they went out there and they battled and they fought. And when they went behind, they kept going at it. They never gave up. They ran themselves into the ground and they kept giving us something. Like, for me, the perfect way to measure it, Ken, is this, right? I was sitting there with the two or three lads on the couch, my kids sitting there on the couch watching it.
Yeah.
And they were glued to it and they were screaming at the telly. And they never took their eyes off, and they never wanted to leave.
That's great.
And they're not doing that with the Premier League matches.
They're
disappearing halfway through it or whatever. But with those Irish matches, they stayed for the whole thing. They were screaming at the telly, and they abused that referee in the Portugal match.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when was the last time you said that? You know, what's Ireland like that? That's the thing about it. You know, so it's good to say. You know, give him a bit of time. He certainly needs it, and hopefully, you know, for the next championships, for the next European championships, you know, that they'll get a few results and hopefully qualify, you know?
Absolutely. Okay, I'll give you your minute on Ronaldo making his debut today against Newcastle. Will they start him?
I think so, I really think so. I was at a golf day, a charity golf day the other day. Ferguson was there, you know, and it was great to meet him, like, again. And actually, he told me that he intervened, you know, like the deal was done for City, believe it or not, you know, and United hadn't spoke to him at all. He went to the Glazers and said, look, you cannot let Ronaldo go to City, this will be the end of you, and you know what I mean, and the Manchester United supporters will never forgive you for it. He said, you've got to go and talk to him and see what, and match whatever City is offering, you know, and that's it. He intervened.
Wow.
You know, at the last minute. Amazing. Yeah, he ended up being at the last minute. And Ronaldo ended up saying, I always wanted to come to United. You know, they never came looking for me. And I thought they didn't want me. And now they do. And I'm going to sign for them. I was never going to go to City, you know.
Oh, wow. That's
incredible. So, big turnaround. A big, big turnaround. So, and he said, like, I don't know where he's going to start or not. But, like, I mean, that remains to be seen.
Yeah.
And of course, the tickets, you know, and the share price went up like 8%. Another $250 million on the price of shares. The shorts sold out within 4 hours. No other players ever done that in history. Manchester United.
Yeah.
Shorts sold out. There was only treble XL left. So you're okay, Reggie. You know what I mean?
yeah, you're all right as well.
Incredible.
The youth section is still open online, you know, the kids section. When there are you?
I'll be all right for the duvet. But it's got to be an incredible, debut, the atmosphere and everything. And also, I mean, not only for the United team, what he's going to bring, but what he's going to bring to the Premiership as well. You know, it's going to be amazing. Like, I know. So I can't wait, you know.
Really,
I know he's 30? He's 38 now. He's 36 now. 36 now. So he's got he signed a 2-year deal, you know. But I mean, as you said, when he took off a short against Ireland, you can see the shape he's in and how driven he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think that's going to be much of a problem. You know, he's a different Ronaldo when he first played there. I mean, I remember, you know, sitting in the stand watching him play. He was one of those players that when he got the ball and he ran down the line, like, everybody just stood up, you know, and no other player could do that. I don't remember, maybe back in the days of Giggs or something like that, or George Best, or maybe Cantona, but he was one of those players that, you know, once he got the ball, you know, everybody stood up watching him. It's just, he brings that to the team, to the club, to the atmosphere and everything. So it's going to be
electric.
It's exciting.
No,
can't wait.
All right. I'm going to have to let you go there because we're packed today with the day that's in it.
Yeah.
You have a good week and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Yeah. When I'm at Old Trafford, I'll have a look out for a shirt for you.
Oh, good man. Yeah. I get two of them and cut them in half and stitch them together. That'll just about fit me. All right.
Have a great day.
Cheers, bud. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. All the best. That's our own Ken there. Of course, filling us in on all of the details. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, it'll be golf with Deirdre Smith. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Now, time to turn our attention to golf. Delighted to be joined by Deirdre Smith, our regular contributor here on the show. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. Very good.
I'm not surprised you're very good. I was glued to the Solheim Cup. It was an amazing tournament, an unbelievable performance by Team Europe, and of course the standout performance by the one and only Leona Maguire, who came home to a hero's welcome during the week, it has to be said. What a brilliant tournament and what a brilliant performance from Leona.
Yeah, look, I'm delighted to hear you saying you were glued to it, Reggie, because that, to me, is the biggest win for golf and for ladies golf. You know, there were people watching the Solheim Cup last week who never watched golf, and there were more people watching it who were golfers. So, you know, any time that happens for ladies golf, and not just because, you know, I'm an avid fan of ladies golf and I'm a golfer myself, but any time that golf is in the picture, men's or ladies, I think it's good for the game. So, I'm delighted to hear that. And as you say, what a performance for them to win. You know, they've won back-to-back now, and they've won in the States, which is a massive achievement. And they've won four of the last six. So, you know, a bit like the Ryder Cup, it's the gap is closing between America and Europe in that regard. And again, what a performance by Leona. I mean, she looked totally at home. She wasn't fazed by the, you know, she almost was kind of saying, well, what do you mean? Am I nervous? Sure, this is the stage I've wanted to play on all my life. So I was so impressed with her, you know, her demeanour, her performance. I mean, you know, she played with Mel Reid, who was a seasoned campaigner. And Mel Reid looked like the rookie. You know, she carried her. She carried her on that first day for certain. The second day, I know Mel produced the shot of a lifetime on the final hole to get a half in that match. But just a star performance. They looked at home, wasn't fazed. And, you know, what a fillip for Irish ladies golf. You know, it's just marvellous.
Yeah, I think you have to give huge credit to the captain, Catriona Matthew, of course, in terms of how she put the pairings together. As you said, that pairing day one, it just seemed to work so well. They worked so well together, and Leona was just so relaxed. I mean, particularly over the putter, where you'd imagine they'd be crazy, you know, nerves and everything else, just looked so relaxed and confident over the whole time. So the pairings were excellent as well.
Yeah, no, I give great credit to Catriona Matthew, but she's one of those players. She's played nine times. She's captained the team twice. In fact, one year, Pedersen was sick, and she took her place and held the winning putt, Catriona Matthew. So, you know, she's one of those quiet players that just gets on with her business, a major champion. And the thing that she did was she got the best out of her players, and that's what any leader should do. She didn't crowd them. She let them prepare the way they always prepared. She knew that they would do all the right things to get themselves in the right place for that first tee. And she didn't, you know, micromanage them. She just let them off. And what a marvellous leader. And they all paid great credit to her. You know, they really paid tribute to her of how good she was. So, you know, she's definitely got the pairings right. And when I saw Mel Reid, and to be honest, on the first day with Leona, I know last Saturday we talked about it. I was a bit worried because they were playing the Cordes, and to be honest, I didn't think they'd beat the Cordes, but the Cordes looked as if they were afraid of losing.
Mm,
and the more they looked like that, the more Leona hammered in those six footers. Now, I would have given Mel Reid a bit of a talking to and said, stop leaving me those six footers. Yeah. But Leona held them all. You know, she held every one of them. But to tell you, if I was her partner, I know what I'd be saying to her.
Give us a little bit of a break here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it was fantastic. And it really was, as you said, a great advertisement for the game. It'll grow the sport. Undoubtedly, and I think, you know, for as everybody has been talking about, for young girls interested in sport, when you're looking at the likes of Kelly Harrington, you're looking at the Paralympians coming back, and you're looking at Leona, it's never been a better time for women's sport in this country. And you know, Leona has done a huge amount to bolster that too. So for women's golf, it's only on the up, I'm sure. So you'll probably see it around the courses. There'll be lots of new members applying and looking to get into the junior ranks, no question about it. In the men's side of the game, then, of course, things are certainly heating up as well. The BMW has gotten off to a cracking start. We're really, you know, I suppose we're mostly focused on Shane Lowry. That's the big thing that we're watching, to see how he can get on and force himself in. I think he's in ninth at the moment on the money list, if I'm not mistaken, but he's eight under, so he's only four off the lead. So going great, and in with a super shout of being part of Porrig's team.
Yeah, I think he's going to be part of the team either way, but yeah. I'd say Harrington would be delighted if he got in an automatic spot. I'd say he probably knows that. I'm guessing he probably knows that. He probably was told that, but just like Katrina Matthew told Leona at the British that she was in, and took the pressure off her, and therefore she was able to go on and perform really well there. So that's my feeling. I could be completely wrong. But he looks like he's going to get in there, and he's 800. He's only four off the lead, playing lovely, rolling the putts in at the moment. So hopefully that will continue for the weekend, and he'll get that automatic place. I know it's a marvelous event in itself. It's a flagship event on the European Tour, so you can't forget that. I know there's a sideshow with the Ryder Cup. So it has a fantastic field. You know, you have Wiesberger, Stenson, Rose. There's so many good players in there. So for Lowry to, and again, he hasn't won this year, so I'm sure he'd love to get a win under his belt, let alone the Ryder Cup berth. I'm sure he'd really like to win the tournament itself, and he likes Wentworth. He's been vociferous about that this week, that it's a place he loves to go to. So, you know, hopefully the stars are aligned for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, yeah, it's going to be, and I can't believe it's so close as well. 24th is only around the corner. It just seems to have sneaked up on us. So what are your thoughts, just quickly, before the tournament starts? I know we're still waiting for the team and everything else, but are you leaning towards Europe? It just feels to me like it does look like a strong American team. Steve Stricker, certainly, he's gotten his team out there quite early, and he's taken maybe one or two risks, but it's a strong-looking team for Europe to face against, and we're going to have plenty of experience by the looks of what Porrig is leaning towards, more so than rookies, maybe. How are you feeling about it?
I'd be worried. I think you're right. I think Stricker has got his team right. I they're all in form. Finau, Schauffele, English, Scheffler, Thomas, DeChambeau. I mean, I know they always look strong on paper. I know they do. I think Stricker has, again, that nice, quiet influence. He's a bit of a, you know, he's not a flamboyant, you know, heckling and raising the crowd and any of that. He's never into any of that kind of stuff. He seems to have got the players on side. They all turned up for meetings with him, and he's spoken about that and how important all of that was, and being prepared. And they're in Whistling Straits for 2 days preparation this week, and they're all showing up. In the past, probably some of them said, oh, I don't need to bother with that. But, you know, I think he's really, really trying to get the best out of them. They're all in form. I'd be a little worried about the European team. There's a couple of players there that they're not really in form at the moment. I'd just be a little worried about that, the American team being in such good form. Rose, I know he's at top of the leaderboard, or he's close to the leaderboard there, but he's at poor form this year.
Yeah.
Fleetwood is in. He's at poor form. McIlroy, you know, his putter is not as hot as it should be. I know, you know, Rahm, of course, is in form. You know, That would be my biggest worry. You know, yeah. I know Ham has hinted towards experience. You know, they've got to turn it around at some stage, and I have a feeling they might do it this year in America. And I think all those new rookies will be really hungry. They won't be carrying the baggage. And I would fear for us, to be
it's
honest.
It's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one. There's no question about it. But we'll see soon enough. Thankfully, it's just around the corner. I'm going to have to let you go, dear. You're just going to give a quick shout out, though, before I do. My own mother, she's leading the captain's prize in her club in Bray. So she's last out today. So best of luck to her. I hope she goes on and wins it. There's a lot of people up in the club in Bray looking forward to her getting out and giving it a go. So.
Good girl. Fantastic.
Exactly. All right. Deirdre, we'll catch up to you again next week. Take care. Good to talk to you.
Take care, Reggie. Bye-bye.
Take care. All the best. That's Deirdre Smith there giving us all of that golfing talk. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll be talking to Stephen O'Brien from the NFL. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan, and thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. Okay, time to turn our attention to NFL now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers Co.UK. Morning, Stephen, how are you?
Morning, Reggie, we made it. Week one, we made it.
We made it, is right. And we said the same thing about Tom Brady, 44 years of age, and he's made it again. He's unstoppable, the man. Off they go again for another season. Will he ever retire?
No. Look, life is full of uncertainty. We know that around COVID, right? It's really shown us that sort of everything can change. Scientists don't know, Reggie, why we yawn. They don't even know why we sleep. What's the meaning of life, Reg? Is there a God? Is there an afterlife? Are we on a giant ball going around the sun? All of that we don't know. But one thing that we do know, Reg, is that Tom Brady will be in the NFL every year, and he'll win games every single year. The guy just doesn't give up. As you said, 44 years of age, and it always happens, Reg, even the best of them, is that, like, we've seen Drew Brees retire, for instance, last year. It happened to Brett Favre, you know, he retired, came back, whatever. We saw that happen. So it tends to happen where you start to see, it either sort of starts to slowly settle in and they change positions, kind of, like we see that on the defensive side of the ball. We often see cornerbacks become safeties and, you know, they kind of put them out to pasture and then all of a sudden they retire. You see with a quarterback, they play really well and then all of a sudden it's like they just fall off a cliff for whatever reason. That just hasn't happened to Tom Brady and the narrative isn't around there with him either. So I think it's easier for you and I and all of the fans just to assume that Tom Brady is never going to retire. And when he does decide to retire, it's totally on his. But, you know, time doesn't come into it. I like to think that, you know, us regular people, you know, we look at him, we think, right, we're retired at 65, 66, 67. I think Tom Brady somehow thinks that that also applies to the NFL. He's going to stay in the game until he's actually at retirement age, and then he's going to go out. But look, I tell you what, Reg, joking aside, I mean, that game was not easy for the Bucs. And to give you a sort of a bit of a crazy stat, he ended up winning 31-29. It came down to the last, like, minute and a half. He had one timeout, which the head coach had to burn to stop a sort of 10-second runoff. But when you look at it, no team has ever won a game when they gave up 100 yards in penalties, 450-plus yards in offense to the other team, and a minus-3 turnover margin in history of the NFL. And they only had 26 minutes of possession. But Tom Brady and the Bucs, they did it in the game that they played in the season opener on Thursday Night Football. So it just goes to show, I mean, you give Tom Brady the ball, even with less than 2 minutes left on the clock, he can make magic stuff happen. He still has it. Yes, there was dodgy decisions in the game, Reg. But he's not going anywhere, unfortunately. Not going anywhere.
Well, speaking of going anywhere, there's somebody that might be already, it's hard to believe, but Mike McCarthy, the Cowboys head coach, is in the hot seat to get fired after just one game. What's that all about?
It sounds wild, doesn't it? I mean, after one game, you're like, how can that even be possible? But look, there's some coaches that are linked to some quarterbacks or players. You know, you look at, you know, all of the coaches that have been linked to Ronaldo or Messi or whatever, and they sort of wonder when they have that split, how did the coaches do after Bill Belichick had Tom Brady? You know, Bill Belichick's season went down the, you know, dumpster chute last season because of all the issues that he had with Cam Newton and COVID and everything else. And Tom Brady went and sort of reached the pinnacles. Mike McCarthy, on the same side, Reg, was always linked to Aaron Rodgers. And it was always like, oh, well, the Packers had Aaron Rodgers and they had Brett Favre and they've only won two Super Bowls and this is a travesty. And people are saying, you know, it's not as simple as just blaming Mike McCarthy or blaming Aaron Rodgers or blaming the defense or whatever. It's very intricate. But then you see Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur having a fantastic success since Mike McCarthy left. McCarthy took a year off. And the one thing, Reds, that they've always fired at Mike McCarthy is that he's antiquated, he's old school, he doesn't believe in analytics, and it kind of bore out again in that game against the Bucs. Now, he got Dak Prescott back, his quarterback. He had an ankle injury. Then he had a shoulder injury. But he threw for over 400 yards. He is a legit quarterback. So they see him coming in, but the kicker missed two field goals and also an extra point, which was a disaster on the night. But we saw once they started to take the lead that, again, Mike McCarthy fell back into his old school ways of you know, kicking the field goal when it's you know, 3 yards to the touchdown or whatever. And I know it's fourth down and it's not a guaranteed thing, but analytics nowadays, Reg, are so sophisticated that they will tell you the odds that you have of scoring that on fourth down or just going for it. And Mike McCarthy always falls back into this old school way. Unfortunately for him, he's two things working against him. Jerry Jones is 78 years old. He's the owner of the Cowboys. He's worth $10 billion, and he's not getting any younger. He is really hungry to win a Super Bowl. Add to that, Kellen Moore is the offensive coordinator, and he's seen as this really inventive, like, he's like the anti-McCarthy in a way. Yeah. He's really inventive, does all this stuff. So here's what we're looking at here. Is McCarthy getting up to his old tricks? Will Jerry Jones get impatient and boot him out for Kellen Moore, who's way more sort of seen as this innovative coach? Yeah. And after one game, we saw all that stuff sort of bear out, Reg. So again, he's on the hot seat, as you say, after one game.
Well, we're going to have to keep a close eye on it. I'm running short of time, and our listeners are always very keen to get your ACCA. So can you give me your week one ACCA? What are you thinking? Who should we go for? And what's the best way to pick it out?
Right, we're going to go spreads, right? Week one is a disaster most of the time. My ACCA, some people argue, is always a disaster, right? But week one ACCA, we're going to play the spreads. It's a 6-1 odds. Put a tenner down, you get 70 back. So we're going the Buffalo Bills to beat the Steelers, and that's a spread of minus 6.5, so there's a touchdown in it. I think the Bills can do it. We're going the San Fran 49ers against the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions are just a mess. So again, there's a fairly big spread on that red. It's minus 8.5, so you're talking, you know, touchdown and a field goal, but I think they can eat that out. And then finally, my beloved Green Bay Packers. Surprisingly, they're the number one offense last year. Red zone, third down, they're fantastic. They look super strong this year as well. Yep. There's only a spread of minus 3.5 against the Saints, and the Saints don't have Drew Brees, and there's defensive sort of things about cornerback there and all that. But needless to say, we need a touchdown to beat the Saints by, and then we'll see to get that home. It's a 6-1 odds. A 5 of them gives you 35, a tenner gives you 70. Excellent. So it wouldn't be a bad little earner.
Excellent. Stephen, sorry to have to cut you short. That's great. We will have a look at that, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Cheers,
mate. Take care. That's Stephen O'Brien there, ukpackers.co.uk, giving us all of that. We'll get that ACCA up online for you to have a look at as well. Okay, it's horse racing time now. And Jane, our producer, managed to catch up with George McDonough during the week for the Racing Pundit for the Over the Line show, of course. So let's have a listen to what he had to say and get his lucky 15.
George, this weekend sees Irish Flat Racing's Champions Weekend, and this has quickly become the most important weekend of the Irish Flat Racing calendar. Can you tell us about that?
It has, Jane. A number of years ago, tomorrow we see the running of the Irish Champion Stakes at Leopardstown. Fantastic race has always been. It was formerly inducted as the Joe McGrath Memorial Stakes many years ago, and it stood on its own normally in the first weekend in September prior to the All-Ireland Hurling Final. And then we have the Curragh's meeting where the Irish St. Ledger would take place normally on the third weekend in September. But Horse Racing Ireland a number of years ago decided to make it a whole weekend of tremendously good quality racing and brought both fixtures together on this weekend in September. It's now become standalone, I think, the best 2 days racing, flat racing, in Europe, to be quite honest. We have the high quality racing for 3-year-olds, we have the older horses involved in the Champion Stakes and the Irish St. Ledger, and some high quality handicap racing as well, and not forgetting the 2-year-olds, the stars of next year, hopefully, and they will strut their stuff both at Leopardstown and the Curragh this weekend.
Okay, brilliant, very exciting. So where will we make our money this week?
Oh, Jane, where are we going to make our money? It is going to be quite hard. Today is Saturday, but I am quite confident the two of my selections can go at least close. Firstly, I'm going in the Doncaster St. Ledger. We're going over to Doncaster in the 3:35, the Kazoo St. Ledger. And although Hurricane Lane, winner of the Irish Derby and winner of the Grand Prix de St. Cloud, is going to go in here pretty hot favourite, around about 6-4 on, 8-11 on. Ever since his success at Leopardstown earlier this season, the Mediterranean has been on my radar. I backed him after he won that maiden. He beat Ruling and King of the Castle convincingly, I thought, over 10 furlongs, and I thought he was going to be the Ledger horse, and I backed him at 33-1 myself each way for the Ledger. He's now showing around 14-16-1. He was beaten by Yabir in the Great Voltigeur, and always a great trial for this race at York. But once Yabir passed him that day, he didn't really go clear, and the Mediterranean was coming back again at the finish. I think this trip is tailor-made. He's sure to be prominent in the front rank throughout, and I think Wayne Norden could enjoy a huge day aboard the Mediterranean. That's my first selection in the 3:35 at Doncaster.
Brilliant. Second, okay, yeah.
Then we're going back to Leopardstown for other three selections, and amazingly, they're all written by Ryan Moore, who many people are criticising this year might be not having his best season, but I think he could have a very good day at Leopardstown, starting in the Coolmore American Justify Matron Stakes at 140. The Group 1 for the fillies won last year, giving John Murta maiden Group 1 success by Sean Perzalise. She's back for more, but I don't think she's the horse she was this year. To me, Mother Earth is clear of the ball. She won the English 1,000 guineas. She's danced every dance at Group 1 level for fillies this season. Winner of the Rothschild last time out at Deauville, second to Snow Lantern, beaten by Alcohol Free, both in Group 1 contest. She's been there, she's done it, and I think she will lift this prize for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. That's number 10, Mother Earth, in the 140 at Leopardstown.
Mm-hmm.
Selection number 3, I'm going for the handicap at 345, the Irish Stallion Farms EBF handicap over a mile and a half. Just a small matter of 23 runners facing the starter. But number 12, Hookup, from the Willie Mullins, yes, normally associated with jump racing, but adapted to landing big flat prizes as well. Hookup hasn't been seen since finishing fourth to Coltor, the Favaros, and Little Valley C in the Amateur Riders Handicap under Patrick Mullins at the first day of the Galway Festival back in July. On that occasion, the first three home were in the first four throughout the contest. It was a muddling enough affair. Patrick Mullins was a fair bit out of his ground through no fault of his own. Now, Hookup has some form over jumps, but there's no doubt he's not in love with the jump game. Better on the flat, I think. And it's very interesting that Willie Mullins has kept Hookup for this race ever since that day in Galway back in July and has booked Ryan Moore. I think it's very significant that at 14-1, looks cracking each way value.
Okay.
Final selection in the lap, Jane. Here goes. This is the one we all want to win. And I am really, really confident that in the 3:15, the Paddy Power Stakes, the Group 3 contest over a mile and a half at Leopardstown this afternoon, number 2, Inish Free, will land the prize. Inish Free, those old enough to remember, was the ancient home of John Wayne's people when it started as Sean Thornton and the Quiet Man. Will Inish Free deliver? Yes, he will today. He was fifth in the Royal Quick Stakes behind Earlswood, doing all his best work at the finish. That was his first run for over 640 days. He hadn't been seen since finishing second to Cameco as a two-year-old in the two-year-old trophy at Newcastle, had won a maiden at Ballybrit prior to that, and was as low as 14-1 for the Epsom Derby back in 2020. Never showed up as a three-year-old. Back for more, I really think this horse is going to progress, and probably next year as well, we'll see a lot of him. But Inish Free for me, number 2 in the 3:15 is my nap this afternoon at Leopardstown.
Okay, you're really selling that one. Another development in the racing world this week, Irish Racing formally adopted the 48-hour declaration system. What is that about?
What is that, Jane? Well, it's something that people like myself, who have an avid interest in racing for many years, have been praying, hoping and crying out for. It basically means, for many years, up till the COVID pandemic started back in March 2020, we would have 24-hour declarations. That means if you're running, want to run on Saturday, you declare to run by 11 a.m. on Friday. Now, that gave you the people studying the form, people preparing for the races, one day to go through the form, and newspapers, I suppose, having earlier and earlier deadlines, weren't given, I personally don't think, wouldn't we give as much attention to the bigger races. Yes, the very big races, about 6 or 8 per year, would have 48-hour declarations. But when the pandemic struck, Horse Racing Ireland, under Jason Morris, Brian Cavanagh, and all those people, Jonathan Mullen, they decided maybe we'll trial this 48-hour. It was basically to help race courses with stabling, etc., and have people committed to go racing 2 days in advance, and you'd have the runners declared. But thankfully, Horse Racing Ireland have seen fit to keep this and have now brought this in as universal across the board for going forward. It means, once again, that everybody will know 2 days in advance. Yes, we've seen a slight increase in non-runners. That's going to happen. The Trainers Federation thought, well, maybe the 48 hours, if they had doubly entered, let's say, for a horse to run on a Friday and a Saturday, they were declaring on Wednesday for Friday, if anything went wrong with the ground, if the ground changed, could they change their minds and they'd be fined for having a non-runner. But I think there will be a nice medium eventually arrived at there. But this means that racing as a sport can get more coverage in the national media, in both voice media on radio, TV media, and the written media, where maybe it's been getting a backseat for a while. People, racing correspondents and sports people, have now two days to prepare for the big racing at the weekend, and I think that will only add to the coverage it gets in mainstream media.
Lastly, who are you backing today in the All-Ireland?
Jane, I will have red and green on me in Old Trafford this afternoon for Manchester United for Ronaldo. I think it's a case that Tyrone will be are not afraid to go and win the game. I think that Mayo might just be, the fear of losing might just count against Mayo. And if I'm betting the race, very, very slight favourites, Tyrone.
Well, I hope you're wrong about that one.
I don't. I have lots of friends in Mayo and I would love to see them finally land that prize. But as a, if you're asking me what's my view of this game, very, very slight favourites, Tyrone. But I don't think it'll be much more than a kick of the ball.
Okay, we'll see. Thank you, George.
Thanks, James.
Just impossible for a Galway man to give credit to Mayo. Okay, fair play to George McDonough, the racing pundit of the Over the Line show. Check that out. Plenty of great tips in horse racing. And we will get his Lucky 15 up online for you all to look at as well. So you can have a bet on that over the weekend. Still plenty to come on the show. We're going to be talking to Paddy Hunter and Declan Drake about the All-Ireland final, of course. And Alan Cawley will be with us to discuss all the great football during the week. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. And you can text us on the show on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp on 087 188 1068 if you'd like to share anything with the show. Okay, before I go to GA, just want to give a shout out. Huge event happening tonight. We've previewed it here before on the show. We had the event on promoting it, but tonight at 9 p.m. Get Broadcasting are live streaming that fun charity event on behalf of the Irish Wheelchair Association. Really, really good event. Five fights between professional boxers, MMA fighters and comedians, all with a bit of a twist. And there's going to be Paddy Barnes, of course, is headlining against Steve Timoney, but there's Artem Labov as well. Al Foran, very funny man, is going to be there. Fabu D and Dylan Moran as well. So there's going to be guest judges, including Ricky Hatton and Pete Taylor. So you can watch that live on paddyvstevo.com at 9 p.m. That's brought to you by getbroadcasting.com. There's a GoFundMe page as well for that, all in aid of the Irish Wheelchair Association. So a very, very good cause. So try and tune into that if you can later on tonight. Okay, it's time to turn our attention now to the big event, the main event of this weekend, which is of course the All-Ireland final between Mayo and Tyrone. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Ulster journalist Paddy Hunter. Good morning, Paddy, how are you?
Not too bad, lads, thank you very much.
I'm sure you're not. Plenty of excitement building. You know, a few weeks ago there was people saying that Kerry will have the All-Ireland in the bag and you know, they'll take care of Mayo. They hadn't even factored in the fact that Tyrone were going to be there, and they proved everybody wrong and turned Kerry over, and did so in style in the end. So you must be feeling pretty confident about their chances today against Mayo.
A couple of weeks ago everybody had COVID as well up here, so there you are. But that's another story. But just to go back, to go to the COVID thing, a lot of people talked about, you know, the trust now being cute, whatever, and various things like that. But I can tell you, it was bad here. It was bad in the camp. That's the genuine thing. Maybe people are maybe glossing over now the fact that there's still five or six lads who haven't made the squad, who on a normal occasion would be, that, you know, the Brennan's, Donnelly's, people like that, you know, would have walked into that squad. But because of COVID and because how badly they were affected, they aren't able to. You know, so it was genuinely bad. That's the first thing. Secondly, getting over Kerry, nobody gave Tyrone a chance. And as Fergal said afterwards, it was a miracle the way some of them lads performed. But you know, about, you know, Tyrone being cute. They were cute in the sideline that day, the way they introduced their substitutes, Brenda and Fergal. And Fergal always say it's Brian that caused the shots for the subs. But Callum McShane, Dara Canavan, two good men to be bringing on in the latter stages of any game, particularly extra time it was the last day. So there's quality about this Tyrone side that many people maybe have missed. It's a mixture of the old and new. You Peter Hart and Matty Donnelly from the old guard, really, from Mickey Hart's day. And then about five or six players around that ilk as well. But then there's the new lads who have come in and certainly performed well. And certainly everybody was talking about Kerry, a Kerry Dublin final. And like, it wasn't going to be. And fair play to Mayo, the way it took out Dublin. But people think, oh, Dublin. But it wasn't the same Dublin. You know that from your point of view. We've seen the problems all year. And if you're from a journalistic point of view, you're looking in and saying, there's something not right there. And you could see it from as early as the end of the National League this year. There were issues there. And I think it's not the same Dublin, and people are getting carried away with that fact as well, that you know, if you had a Dublin from last year, you wouldn't have been beating them the way Mayo did. And they've always had internal issues as well. And that's something maybe people need to look at too going forward. But Tyrone and Mayo in an All-Ireland final, I don't think anyone at the start of the year would have thought that would be the case. That's for sure.
No, there's no doubt about it. And the funny thing about this pairing today, the matchup, is that it's kind of hard to predict the winner, simply because everybody's kind of saying, well, I hope they haven't shot their duck too early. Mayo, no Dubs and Tyrone against Kerry. I hope the semi-final wasn't their All-Ireland. You know, that sort of way. There's still one huge game to go, and no one can seem to work out who has the edge at the minute. There's also that thing, and I've heard it mentioned by a couple of people, maybe the longer effect of the COVID stuff for the Tyrone lads. Are they going to feel some sort of a lag, tiredness or something, you know, with all this long COVID and stuff that they talk about? So there's a little bit of an unknown factor there with that as well. But also, like, I mean, there's so many things going on, like the pressure on the Mayo lads, you know, everybody's saying, this is it, this is your chance, you're going to break this curse, it's 70 years, Tyrone, your best chance ever, it's not Dublin, it's not Kerry, you have to go and do it. That's almost worse pressure.
Do you know, people seem to forget that Mayo would be Tyrone's bogey team. I think in 8 or 9 meetings, I think there's only been one or two victories for Tyrone. You know, so people have to look at that. You know, even go back as far as 1989, when Tyrone were wanting to right the wrong of 86, getting beat by Kerry in Northern final. They wanted back to the final again in 89, leading at half time. And Willie Joe Padden and Spared Mayo come back and beat Tyrone, the blood beating out of the side of his head, if you remember. You know, so there's a lot of issues that people maybe seem to don't bring into this. Certainly long COVID could be one as well. You don't know how the lads have, how they'll perform in a match. They've been going very well in training, there's no doubt about that. The in-house games have been frantic, they've been very good. The mood in the camp is very positive. But it's an All-Ireland final, and, you know, there's pressure on both sides. But Tyrone, really, to say pressure is probably the wrong thing, because they don't really have anything to lose at all. No one expected this Tyrone side to be in an All-Ireland final. That's the first thing. Fergal and Brian are the new managers to come in at the end of last year, start of this year. So nobody really expected much from this group. And you look at the early stages of the National League and how they performed, they came good. That trouncing they got in Kerry done them no harm at all. They went back, rebuilt, and they're coming into this game. They're Ulster champions, and that's a bonus on its own from a Tyrone perspective, because it's been a long time. So there's positives in the Tyrone camp that way, and they've absolutely nothing to lose. The pressure, if any, would be on Mayo because of the curse and because people think, oh, it's only an Ulster team, it's only Tyrone. The days of Ulster teams coming down to Croke Park just to make up the numbers are long over.
Yeah.
But that was the case, as they were for a long time. So I suppose we have to take the positives out of it. Tyrone going into this game, you know, they've nothing to lose. Mayo have probably more to lose in terms of the curse and in terms of the pressure on them for 70 years. But people tend to forget this. It was over 100 years from Tyrone until Tyrone even got into an All-Ireland final, let alone won one. So I think 70 years isn't too bad for some counties.
It's great to look at both teams, and as you said, you're seeing younger, fresher faces in both squads, and you know, maybe those faces don't have the same baggage that other players might have had coming from the past. And you mentioned the management there. You know, there was 18 years there of Mickey Hart being in charge of Tyrone, and now the new team of Brian Duer and Fergal Lone coming in, but also James Horan from the Mayo point of view. Like, he's made some big calls during the course of the campaign, making substitutions at crucial times and everything else. Just how crucial is the actual management battle of this between the two sets of managers? How much of a part is that going to play in it, do you think?
Well, I suppose I know more probably about the Tyrone backroom team, obviously, but you've Collie Holmes there, an All-Ireland winner. Joe McMahon from his own club almost in the end is an All-Ireland winner. Peter Donnelly, their strength and conditioning. Very strong backroom team, along with Fergal and Brian. Fergal obviously lost an All-Ireland final. Brian captain Tyrone to 2-1-3 medals. You know, so he knows, they all know what it takes to win an All-Ireland. That's the big thing. Fergal, maybe not so much, but he did lead the team here. He was there. And I think it's the first year syndrome as well, because people tend to forget as well that Mickey Hart came in on the 12th of November 2002. A year later, they were All-Ireland champions. People tend to forget that was a first year for Mickey as well. So there's a lot to be said for the first year scenario with Tyrone, but they're coming into this game with a vast, experienced sideline. And I think that, and when you say the sideline, you look at their squad as well, the strength and depth. You know, there's players lining out on the bench today who would start in games like some Mark Bradley. You know, Sheehan in 2018, now he's on the bench, had to settle for that. You know, and I think that's just one example of the players that Tyrone have. Look at Horn. He's brought in a lot of new faces. He's made changes. He's been brave. And again, bravery is a key thing. Bravery without panic is something we often talk about in management. And if you can make a big call, Mickey Hart made the call with Peter Canavan a few years ago whenever he brought him off and brought him back on again in an All-Ireland final. You know, you have to make those big calls. Tyrone made them calls in the semi-final. You know, like, as I said, McShane and Canavan coming on, you knew they were always going to come on and make an impact. And they're on the sideline there today again. And I suppose the pressure would have been on Fergal and Brian to give Cahill a start. He scored 1-3 in the All-Ireland semi-final. Done well. But he didn't get a start. And that goes down to the bravery, and that goes down to the knowledge that these guys have of the players they have. And I think both sides have that on the sideline. Both sides have a lot of experience on the sideline. And both sides have a lot of experience on the pitch as well. And I think that it's going to be a very tight encounter. There's no doubt. There's absolutely no doubt it's going to be, you know, minimal between the both sides going through, particularly into the last quarter. And then I think that's where the Tyrone firepower may take them over the line. And they have a lot of quality there in terms of firepower, something that we hadn't seen in Tyrone for some time, because 2018, Mark Bradley basically led the line for Tyrone against Dublin in the All-Ireland final on his own. You know, we don't have that anymore. It's a completely changed approach from Tyrone's football style. Their stance going into games. So they're going down there, and they've absolutely nothing to lose. And it's, I would say it's an air of confidence, but not overconfidence. You know, and it's not being smart. I think it's the fact that obviously it is Mayo, and but people have said that Tyrone had never beat any of the big three going into games, and you know, Mayo being one of those big three. Obviously they beat Kerry this year, they beat Donegal as well, so they're going into this game full of confidence. And bear in mind, this is their third game at Croke Park as well. This year, for a lot of players who hadn't maybe even played at Croke Park before, so there's a, you have to take the positives out of it certainly. And I know Tyrone people are going there, albeit not as many as they would have hoped in other years. Yeah. And the ticket issue has been a massive one up here. I've never seen it, ever seen it as bad. And that's disappointing, I suppose, to a lot of people.
Absolutely. I think it's as bad for the Mayo fans too. They're talking about it a lot. Mm-hmm. Tactics and quality on the bench, two things that Paddy mentioned there. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Good morning, Paddy. How are you?
Mark Daglam, my old friend, how you keeping?
Well, I'm most disappointed we're not getting the opportunity to have a coffee this afternoon in Croke Park.
Like, absolutely.
But there you go, such is life, the best of luck.
That's it.
Best of luck with it anyway. But you mentioned Peter Hart there a little bit earlier on, and just doing some research during the week. He has chipped in with important scores at different times in different matches. So Mayo's ability to keep him pressed back inside his own half might be a key factor today, do you think?
I would think so. But then you look at Kieran McGeary and Miller, and there's probably been no other player as like Duher was in his heyday as Earl and Conor Miller from my own club here. And, you know, he gets on with the work. He may not chip in with a lot of scores, but his running, his man marking ability is superb. And, you know, he'll be tasked with a job today, and he'll stick at that. McGeary will be the same. He will run, he will take the game to them. So Hart may be ineffective, but Peter Hart coming forward, if he gets an opportunity, he'll take it. That's for sure, Declan. There's no doubt about that. There, we've seen that all through the years. That said, the full back line all scored against Kerry. The goalkeeper scored against Kerry. So it's hard to know, you know, where the thrown threat's coming from, because, you know, there were so many scores on the day. And as I said, you know, it's not often you see a full back line all scoring plus the goalkeeper. Particularly that one just before half time against Kerry was an exceptional one from Morgan. Something you probably won't see again maybe for a while. And that said, he can play corner forward as well, as we've seen against Mullaghan. So you don't know where he's going to pop up. But no, I would think they will try and nullify certain players. Mayo will certainly try and do that for sure, Declan.
Yeah, of course, we're known for having a point-scoring goalkeeper ourselves in Dublin over the years.
That's right.
It must be pointed out, all famously, 2011, which seems a long time ago now. A point that people seem to be forgetting here is Mayo's consistency too, Paddy. I mean, this is back-to-back All-Ireland finals for them as well. You know, completely different circumstances to what it was last December, of course, in an empty Croke Park. And that, and you have...
Yeah.
Whatever about your boys in Tyrone in their first year, and have done tremendously well to win the Ulster title and qualify for the All-Ireland final. The work that James Horan has done in his second spell in charge has been phenomenal, but he has to deliver this today. There's simply no excuses.
Absolutely. If they don't deliver today, a lot of people will say, well, that's that. You know, and it certainly will be that for one or two players. And you think the likes of Lee Keegan and players, you know, McShay and people like that there, O'Shea, you know, you think this will be the end of the road for them. But getting back-to-back All-Ireland finals, as Dublin have proved, is never easy. But some counties can just do it. And I suppose we were spoiled in the noughties with the fact that we were playing either a final or an All-Ireland semi-final back-to-back, basically every year through the noughties, and people were spoiled with that. But see, now getting to a final is such a big thing again. It's brilliant that way. But for Horan to get his team to back-to-back All-Ireland finals, it will be a massive boost psychologically for them. But as you say, Declan, if they don't deliver, that's a bigger effect on you. But as we've seen, and I'm not going to bring up Dublin again, I'm sorry, but that's, I have funny. To, but Meath Ladies last week.
Thanks, Paddy.
You know, Meath were beaten by us in 2018. Tyrone scored 6 goals against them in that Ladies final. And for them to come back the way they did and bounce back year in, year out, you have to give great credit there as well. So it does have an effect. Being McCrow Park certainly has an effect. It proved for us in 2017 when we got beaten in the Ladies final by Tipperary. You know, the following year we were back. You know what they expect. And I think that will have a difference. But the fact that Tyrone, as I said, them new lads have played at Croke Park, and this will be their third time. You know, there's a few lads in that senior team may have not even played in Croke Park prior to that, you know. So you have to look at it that way. As someone often said, it's a green field with 4 posts. So there you are. Wherever it is.
There's no doubt about it, Paddy. It's going to be one hell of a game. We're all really looking forward to it. It's an intriguing, one of the most intriguing finals we've had for many years, where no one can really say definitively who they think is going to win this game.
No, that's so
it's
right.
Going to be a cracking match to watch. Wish you all the very best to look at it. I know you'll enjoy it one way or the other. And thanks so much for giving us your time this morning.
Well, thank you very much, lads, and best wishes out of Declan as well. Keeping everything ticking over well down there, as always. And don't worry back, Declan, don't be worrying.
There's no fear of that. No fear.
2022 is only on
the
corner,
lads.
Paddy.
Take care, Paddy.
That's
all
it.
The best.
Thank you, lads. All the best.
Grimmauld. Paddy Hunter there, of the journalist with the Ulster Herald, of course, giving us all of his thoughts. True Tyrone man and excited. You can hear it in his voice about that big encounter that's going on today. It's going to be a cracking match. It really is. Whatever side you're lying on, for us, it's... as a neutral, to be able to sit back and watch what's going to be a great game of football is going to be something special. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we will be discussing that rather sore point of that Dublin ladies' loss to Meath last weekend. And we'll also be looking at the Dublin Senior Football Championship with Declan, so don't go away. 106.8. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Okay, well, last weekend saw the Ladies All-Ireland Final, and it was disappointment for Dublin. And in fact, it was the first time since 2004, would you believe, that either Dublin or Cork weren't victorious. Meath coming out on top in what was a very thrilling encounter, 2 points the stronger by the end of the game. After the game, a very disappointed Dublin manager Mick Bone caught up with Declan Drake. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Look, we're hugely disappointed. At the end of the day, devastation is for different things in life. I have to take my hat off to Meath. I thought they were outstanding. I don't know if I saw that coming. Maybe we didn't. I certainly couldn't get over with their intensity. Maybe it's the first time we've seen it up front. They certainly weren't overawed by the occasion, and that's a testament to them and the work that's been done with them. But we've no qualms. We thought we were well equipped coming into the game, but obviously I got some things wrong.
There would have been a lot of talk, Mick, about the five in a row, mostly, I'm sure, outside of the group over the last couple of weeks since you qualified for the final. Do you think at all perhaps that might have been just a factor in the team's performance on the day, the pressure of that?
And I'm saying this to you in all honesty, we weren't going for five in a row. We were going for each of these All-Irelands are independent of each other. Ultimately, I obviously let that seep into the group because that's not the message that we wanted. Like, these are unique occasions in our games.
And Mick, overall, it's been a fantastic period since you came back at the start of 2017. You know, 4 All-Ireland titles, 2 National League titles in that period as well. You've worked with a fantastic group of women, fantastic group of footballers. What would you like to say to them now at this particular stage?
I suppose today was the end of a road for probably half a dozen of that group, and you would have obviously written the script differently from our end. But again and again on that one, like, I mean, we've lost the game today. That's, you know, that's what has happened. We've been lucky enough to be on the right side of it and to experience the happy days, so we'll take this one on the chin. And I say it again, like, you know, I'm so lucky to have been given the opportunity to work with the quality of people that I've dealt with here over the last 5 years. Yeah, they're a phenomenal group of people, and I've benefited, my family have benefited, my 2 youngest kids, 2 girls, look up to them as heroines.
Very emotional, Mick Bone, there, it has to be said. You can hear the disappointment in his voice and how much it all means to him. But Meath, you know, you spoke to me there off air, Declan. They started very well. They were very physical. Got their tactics right.
Yeah, first of all, I have to say congratulations to Meath. There's absolutely no issue about their success on the day. It was a thoroughly deserved victory, Reg. And from the start, from the throw-in, they were on top. They strangled Dublin in all sectors of the park, really. Had a nice little lead at half-time. And try as the girls did, and believe you me, they did in the second half. 2 points was as close as they got ultimately, and there was never a chance of them getting the goal to snatch the victory from the Royals. So yeah, hats off to them. Fantastic overall performance, fantastic year for them. They won Division 2 of the league. Now they're the All-Ireland senior champions. And you mentioned the fact there is the first time that Dublin or Cork haven't been All-Ireland champions since 2004. It's a remarkable statistic in itself, the dominance that those two counties have enjoyed in that period of time. That's been broken now. There's a new kid on the block, and not only that, but they're here to stay as well.
Good for the game, Declan.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. To freshen it up, Reg. Absolutely. And next year's National League will be very interesting, whatever structure and format it takes. Mm. But it's going to be one hell of a championship next year. There's a new kid on the block as champions, and Dublin for the first time since 2017 go in not being the All-Ireland champions. That's a completely new experience. And Mick referenced it there, you know, 5 or 6 girls maybe from that group have played their last game for Dublin. That remains to be seen over the next few weeks and months. But look, if they decide to go, they've been absolutely wonderful ambassadors. They've been a great group of people to work with over the last 5 years. Tremendous characters, and wish every single one of them every success in their future endeavours. And indeed Mick as well, because I think, you know, reading between the lines there, the indication is that he may not be the manager again next year. It's his second spell in charge, 5 years there. You know, he won 4 consecutive All-Irelands, 2 National Leagues, lost only 1 championship game in that period of time. Tremendous level of success and dedication to the cause. And it does take it out of you. Might appreciate the opportunity for a break and see what happens later on. If he does decide to go, again, I'd like to just put my public gratitude on the record to him for his courtesy and cooperation over the last number of years. Never failed to conduct an interview and was always honest in his thoughts, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I second that. Okay, in other management news, good good news from a continuity point of view. Matty Kenny being continuing to be appointed as the hurling manager.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean Lane and I discussed this on the programme last week, particularly around the fact that the vacancy in Galway was there now, and would Matty be tempted back to his native land? But the statement that came out from the county board, I think it was Wednesday afternoon, put that to bed, and he's staying on for a fourth year. As you say, from a continuity point of view, it's most welcome. I spoke to him, if you remember, Reg, on the pitch after the defeat to Cork in the quarter final in Thurles, and the impression I got from him that evening was that he wanted to stay. He believed in the project. There was growth potential in the project. With the under 20 All-Ireland final team under my club mate Paul O'Brien a couple of months back, and then this year's team as well, some tremendous talent there that he feels he can work with. And yes, absolutely, from a continuity point of view, it's important that he stayed, because the thoughts of getting a new man in, ripping up the script, if you like, and starting from scratch again, it could set us back, as it has done in the past on occasion. So delighted that Matty's staying on. Best wishes to him. He'll be very interested in the club championship over the next couple of months as well, trying to just maybe, you know, pick out that little nugget or two that just might make that little bit more of a difference next year.
Yep, very good. Speaking of championship, of course, the Dublin Senior Football Championship fixtures have been announced. You have a preview of them there tomorrow, is it?
Yeah, it actually started last night, okay. Would you believe? It started with a double header at Parnell Park, amongst other places. Ballymun Kickhams, the defending champions, opened their go-ahead Ireland Championship campaign for 2021 with a two-point defeat of Thomas Davis, 112-110 over the Kiltipper Road men, and they were really made to work hard for the Munn boys in that, but they came through in group three. Nafina had 9 points to spare over Whitehall Columbkill in the opening game, 118-12 points. In a group four, Round Towers of Lusk, a surprise result, beating Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua, 316-9 points, while in group four, Skerries were 4 point winners over Clontarf, 11-7. Double headers on both sides of the Liffey tomorrow, Reg. Very attractive double headers indeed. At Parnell Park from 1:30, it's Ballyboden against Raheny. That's followed by Kilmacud versus Castleknock. So plenty of Dublin stars on display there in all those teams. And across the river in my own part of the city, in Crumlin, O'Toole Park, Vincent's taking on Ballinteer St John's. I know that Sean Lane, Darren Chambers, and all the boys will be making their way to O'Toole Park there for 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And before that is St Jude's and Lucan. So it's very strange that the Dublin Club Championship is starting this weekend, when we should have been perhaps looking forward to another All-Ireland final appearance this afternoon, the way things worked out, but that wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, it wasn't on this occasion, but there's always next year. And then finally, of course, we just want to congratulate Fox Rock Cavintilly on their sixth Leinster Ladies title.
Yeah, I was just looking at the calendar this morning. They won the sixth consecutive county title on the 12th of December last year, 2020, covered the game out in Lawless Park against Kilmacud Crokes. The Leinster Council were ultimately determined to complete their 2020 Leinster competition, which they did last Wednesday. So they beat Portlaoise in the final in Carlstown. So well done to Nipper and all the girls there. Particularly, I'd have to say to the likes of Sinead Goldrick and Niamh Collins, who suffered disappointment with Dublin last Sunday. And then to be involved 3 days later winning with Fox Rock has given them some source of consolation, I'm sure.
Finally, because I didn't actually ask you, Mayo or Tyrone today?
It's a head and heart situation, to be honest, for me. You know, the heart says Mayo, the head says Tyrone. I don't know who's going to win. If you're asking me who I hope is going to win, I'm going to say I hope that the team that beat us do win, and that's Mayo.
Okay, very good. Right, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll be talking to Alan Cawley, and Declan will stay with me here in studio to cover all things football. We'll be looking at the SSC, Airtricity, and also I want to look back on those recent Ireland games and discuss those in a little bit more detail. Don't go away. Sunshine 106.8. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyEvent.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. Okay, time to turn our attention to football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. I'm good, thanks.
Good stuff. I'm not surprised. It's a good, fresh day. It's plenty of sport to look forward to this weekend. And it was a great week of sport. And I have to say, I'm going to start with the international stuff. I was absolutely delighted, is the only way I can describe it, with what I watched in those three games. And I know the results didn't go our way the way we would have liked, maybe. We were very unfortunate. I said it to Ken earlier on, but he said we were robbed by the referee against Portugal. But I get that. But I still believe it was an unbelievably solid performance. And in the end, you know, the class of Ronaldo just came through, and they got that result. But against Azerbaijan, you could argue we should have got a win, we got a draw. But to get a draw against a team like Serbia, I think there's been nothing but positives out of this run of games.
Yeah, absolutely, Reggie. It's mad, really, because I don't remember in all the years following the Irish team and obviously being involved with the football, the constant conversation and debate that seems to be going on after every match. And I don't know, is it because Stephen is in charge or what's the story, but there seems to be a debate breaking out after every single match and people's views are changing from game to game, which I find bananas, really. And I know, is it the world we live in now with social media, the influence that has, and everybody kind of airing their views so quickly and so... kind of as soon as the game is over and so immediate. But I would always kind of like to have a view from the outset and let it play out, let it see what happens and let a pattern emerge or see exactly where we're going. And as you said, maybe look at the three games and then make a judgment, or look at the campaign and make a judgment or whatever. I just don't understand how people can go from being so positive after the Portugal game, yet they wanted to rip it all up on Sunday. And then we go into the Serbia match on Wednesday, and then they put in a really good performance, as you said, against an outstanding team. I knew Serbia were good, but even being in at the match, Reggie, looking at them in the flesh, they were absolutely brilliant. They really were. Serbia were excellent. And even just in terms of when you take all the factors into consideration and the group of players and the level that we're playing at compares to what Serbia have, even just to hang in, I thought they did really well, and the boys played to their limit and done everything asked of them. And we're brave in possession at times. Of course, Serbia have better players, as I said, and they're going to dominate possession for large periods. We kept in the game, obviously, largely due to the fact the goalkeeper was brilliant on the night as well. And then to round it all off, we got a bit of luck and a bit of good fortune that Stephen, you could argue, hasn't had any luck or any fortune whatsoever since he's taken over. And we got the draw. So, as you see, I'd be still very hopeful. I'd be still very positive. I know people are kind of putting a spin on it that it's results-based. But I never felt we were going to qualify out of this campaign either. And that's not to say Stephen's getting a free pass. We have to see improvements and progress. And to me, so far, looking at the game the other night, Reggie, I'd let him get on with it. I'm quietly happy seeing what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I mean, I heard the lads on Second Captains, you know, Ken talking about, you know, where does this sense of entitlement come from?
Yeah,
I agree with it. I mean, I just looked at those group of players in the three of those matches. I thought they gave it absolutely everything that they had. You know, they're the best players that we have available to us, and they never stop fighting or running or tracking back. And you say we got a bit fortunate against Serbia, but the fortune came from constant pressure, being in there and forcing errors. And that's what you have to do against teams. You have to keep other teams under pressure and force them to make mistakes. That's in every sport. And, you know, if that means it falls in the way of an own goal, as it turned out to be, I wouldn't, you know, I just see that as a result for the amount of pressure that they put in. And like you, I feel that there is a positivity around, for the most part, though. I mean, I think most people are kind of going, like, there's the other few detractors, and there always will be. But for the most part, they see people's reaction amongst the fans anyway, and the hardcore seem to be, we're okay, we're happy with this.
Yeah, if you have any understanding of the game and where Stephen is coming from in terms of what he's taken over and the mismanagement that's gone on for years in the FEI, and this is the group that we have, of course you'll understand and you'll be reasonable and rational in your view. And as you said there, but I listened to that the podcast talking about the entitlement. Azerbaijan, Reggie, whether we like it or not, but people thinking we should be rocking up beating even those countries.
Yeah.
Azerbaijan, they have largely a Champions League-based squad because the majority of them play with Karabakh, who are playing the Champions League every year. Mm. So even they're probably, if not better, but they're on a par, whatever the case may be. So like, you look at the three that Stephen played against Portugal, was it? Or sorry, the Azerbaijan game. Mm. Troy Parrott, a young kid starting off on loan at the MK Dons. Adam Ida, who did great in the three games, as you said, worked tirelessly, gave it his all, looked very promising at times in the game. Can't get a game at Norwich. Aaron Connolly, same at Brighton. So this is where we're at, Reggie. People need to understand this. You've Jamie McGrath coming into the team, who's playing with St Mirren. No disrespect to Jamie, and he's a great lad, and I'm delighted to see him getting involved. And he could probably play higher than St Mirren, but that's where he's playing at the moment. The young fella at the back, Ahmed Bamadeli, was brilliant. Bazunu, who's only 19, on loan at Portsmouth.
Yeah.
So there has to be some sort of understanding in terms of where we're at as well, as you say, rather than thinking we should just talk up. I know Stephen
brought a bit on himself at the start in terms of just talking and hyping it up and bigging it up. But you have to understand, Reggie, what we're up against, the opposition. You take all the factors into consideration. You even mentioned the three games and how they tried and gave everything. That's on top of lads not even getting regular game time at their own clubs, Reggie. Yeah. You could imagine how hard it was to go three games, and not even three games where you're playing okay opposition. They would have had to absolutely break their backside out in Portugal just to stay in the game there. Then you come back, you're playing Azerbaijan, and the other night again, you look how difficult and tiring that game would have been at, off the back of the Portugal-Azerbaijan game. So I'm for Stephen, as you know, but that's not to say he shouldn't be questioned, he shouldn't be criticised, but this constant debate after every single match, I just don't get that at all.
Well, good morning, Alan.
Morning, Declan.
You survived your trip to the showgrounds last night?
I did, and I'm out in here, Declan. You'd love where I am now at the moment. Out in the excellence, or School of Excellence for Sligo GAA.
Beautiful.
Watching me mate's son play, yeah.
We'll talk more about the league a little bit later, but going back to the international thing, backing Stephen Kenny, there's a split in the country, although I think most people seem to be in favour of him and what he's doing and all that. But the FAI seem a little bit, to me, reluctant or slow to back him based on what I heard during the week. Is that something that you would agree with? Would you not favour them coming out now and saying, look, this is the situation, we are going to extend his contract, or can you understand why they're being a bit reluctant?
No, I think, to be fair to Jonathan Hill yesterday, and you can look at it both sides of it. Some people, as you said, Declan, were coming out saying, why don't they just back him and say, all right, he's going to be there for the Euros now. But I think, to be fair to Jonathan Hill, the other side of it was that we'll assess it at the end of the campaign in a calm and rational manner. And I think that should have been the case all along, that why are people trying to make judgments after every game? He still has, obviously, the three or four games left, probably at the Nations League before his contract is up, and then make a judgment. They don't need to be making any rash decisions now in terms of who's the manager, who's not the manager, because you look at what's out there and what's available and alternatives, and some of the names I've heard mentioned, I'd gladly leave Stephen where he is at the moment. So I felt yesterday what Jonathan Hill said was fairly understandable, fairly reasonable, and again, as I said at the start, judge it at the end of the campaign.
Yeah, okay. We'll see how that unfolds. Okay, we've plenty to get through, so I want to turn our attention now to the SSE, of course, and Rovers got a good win last night, 2-0 victors over Waterford. Declan, you managed to get a chat with Stephen Bradley. Let's have a little listen to that piece.
Yeah, it's a great free kick. But we said at half time it was going to come, the way we were playing and the chances we were creating. It was going to come. It was just a matter of being patient and trusting what we did, and credit to the players, they did that. They never got panicked, got rushed. They kept playing, kept probing, and we got rewards. We went up a gear or two in the second half. After having a look at their game plan the first half, we obviously tweaked it at half time and went up a little bit, and I thought we were very good.
Yeah, Alan, very good, and seemed to be calm and collected at the moment. Two games in hand, 3 points ahead. Still have Sligo and Pats away to come, so a couple of testers. But as Declan said to me here in studio, if they can get those two into the bag, might be job done.
Yeah, they're in the driving seat, Reggie, and it was a good win for them last night because Waterford have improved. But they needed that because obviously they're coming off the back of four defeats in a row in all competitions, and that was a big blow to them, obviously, in their confidence. So that was a big win for them last night, especially the fact that, obviously, we're down here in Sligo in the game with St. Pat's, and St. Pat's losing. So they've opened up a little bit of a gap there now, and the game's at hand. And we said all along, they're in the strongest position, their favourites, the resources, the budget. Should be winning the league, really. St. Pat's have been a surprise package in terms of being title contenders and Sligo Rovers. So that does put them firmly in the driving seat, and they should go on and win the league from here now, Reggie.
Yeah, no question about it. But we'll keep an eye on that. Okay, across the water. I don't know if you heard Ken earlier this morning when I was talking to him. Gave me an amazing piece of information. He met Sir Alex during the week. You know?
I saw that, his mate, yeah.
Yeah, Ken's old buddy. He loves the old name dropped as Ken, but anyway. But he said that Alex intervened and got Ronaldo. Basically, the City conversation was going on, and Alex told him, he went to the Glazers, he said, lads, you can't let that happen. You can't let him go to City. You got to talk to him. And Ronaldo hadn't even been discussed or anything else, and it happened. They discussed it. When he went, he was delighted. And the next thing is, there he is. He's going to be starting today, yeah, probably, or certainly playing today against Newcastle. Amazing.
It is, really, but I'd have Alex Ferguson still in the dugout, Reggie, to be honest with you, if I had my way. He's just an amazing man, and obviously all that he achieved, and I know he's had his health issues and all, and he's not in charge now, but that just goes to show the influence and the power that he has. And it probably comes back to the fact, again, with Solskjaer, kind of undermined him a little bit still, you know, because if that was the case, and that's exactly what happened, and even look at Ronaldo's post on Instagram, sure, at the bottom of it, he says, this one's for you, boss, or yeah, something. So that's, look, that is the influence and the power that he has, and he's been like a father figure to Ronaldo. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in terms of him trying to manage Ronaldo, now Solskjaer, and not only him, how he's going to fit them all in, Reggie, because on paper you're looking at it thinking, okay, they've signed Ronaldo, it's a no-brainer, bring him in for a year or two in terms of the lift and the boost it gives to everybody. But now he's going to play in the team every week. You have Bruno Fernandes who'll have to play, Pogba will have to play, or else you throw the toys out of the pram, and then you're only left with maybe Greenwood and Rashford, and they paid $80 million for Sancho, so you can't fit them all in, especially when he plays with two sitting midfielders as well. So if he does that with Fred and McTominay, you've only four attacking spots with seven or eight players to choose from. And not only, like, it's seven or eight top-class superstars that you have to choose from, trying to keep all them happy. And you know my feelings on Solskjaer as it is. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in terms of him trying to manage all that.
There's a lot of cocky United fans coming out of the woodwork. There's a lot of lads thinking it's their year.
In terms of even just to view it and watch it and see how it plays out, with Ronaldo coming back today and the huge news that was that he signed back, it will be, of course, it's going to be great viewing to see how it plays out. But just from the management side of things and how we will kind of fit them all in, that's what I'm really kind of interested in, because Greenwood has emerged as probably their main player this year. So you can't leave him out. Rashford is out injured at the moment in England international, and again, a star. Where's he going to play? I already mentioned $80 million for Sancho. It's going to be interesting to see how he kind of tries to fit them all in, because he can't fit them all in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Some interesting games, all right, going on. Leicester playing host to City, of course. That's a big one for Leicester. But City are just so strong at the moment. The other huge game, massive game, the bottom of the table clash, Arsenal against Norwich.
I know, yeah. They have to get a win. They have to get a win,
Arsenal.
They have to get a win. It's been tough going for you, yeah. Whenever about the United fans, it's been tough going for Arsenal. And when you think about the rivalry that was built up over the years there with United and Arsenal, and look at them now, Reggie, look at them now.
It is. It's a strange state of affairs. There's no question about it. Look, they'll drag themselves together a little bit. But Chelsea then as well, of course, your pre-season team that you picked out. You know, they're sitting there in fourth with 2 points off the lead. Spurs sitting up there on top. But Chelsea, great chance to get the job done against Villa today. You'd expect that.
Yeah, you'd expect Chelsea to win. And I think that's what we said from the start, Reggie. And I think the Premier League will probably kick off now, because normally when it starts back, you do have the international window after the couple of games, and it's almost like it starts and it stops. Whereas now they'll obviously have a good run of games at it, and you'll see all the teams emerging. And I think what we did say at the start, and I think it will be the case, that we'll have three or four teams challenging at the top, and it'll make a really good view, and it'll be really competitive. It'll be great to watch. Because you look at the teams at the top, they're so strong. City and Chelsea are obviously the outstanding candidates, but Liverpool on their day, when they're their best 11, so good. If Ronaldo clicks at United, obviously you'd put them into the mix. Maybe I wouldn't have them to win the league now, but they'd certainly be up there challenging, you would think. Spurs have had a great start as well. Leicester obviously done great things under Rodgers. So I think we're in for a really competitive and good Premier League this year, rather than one team running away with it.
Declan?
I'm sure, Al, we were talking about shirt sizes earlier on, and Reg was being ripped by Ken about the size of the shirt. I suppose a Ronaldo medium would probably suit you, would it? You're a man of your stature.
A medium, yeah. But I was getting a mistake last night now, Declan. I probably need to get back to him and chat. But I'd say a medium all along.
They're 130 quid, Declan. You're joking. Just be joking. I mean, there's no way Colley's going to be paying 130 quid.
I wouldn't pay 130 quid for any shirt. That's a disgrace for young kids and young people and all that. That's a disgrace.
But you're sponsored. You're sponsored. Look at all the lovely shoes and stuff you wear and all the lovely...
Well, if anyone wants some of them things, I'll give them away for free, Rich.
Who have you got podcast this week? What are we looking at?
We're hoping to have Georgie Kelly, Bowes striker Georgie Kelly, joining us. So they had a disappointing result last night, but Georgie's coming off the back of a great summer, the European run, and he's the top scorer in the league as well. So, and they're going for the cup. So the cup is going, as we mentioned earlier, Shamrock Rovers should go on and win the league now, and it might not be all that interesting, but the cup should be really interesting, because we could have new winners on the cup this year.
Yeah, of course, Dundalk need to win the cup. That's the reality.
Dundalk need to win tonight. They need to win tonight,
from bottom of the league.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. You're talking about Ireland.
Dundalk second from bottom. Who would have thought it? Highest budget in the league. It's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's quite amazing to think that it's gotten to that stage. All right. There was a little bit of, really quickly, there was a little bit of niggle in the tunnel last night, was there?
You love to see it, Reggie. That's what it's all about. A proper old-fashioned game last night. We're kicking lumps out of each other and a bit of argy-bargy in the tunnel. That's what it's all about. None of this VAR soft nonsense in England. League of Ireland, that's where it's at, Reggie.
All right, give me a prediction. Tyrone or Mayo today? Remember Jane now in studio.
I know, I already told you. And I want Mayo to win, but I don't think they will. Tyrone are too tough.
Yeah, that's it, you're gone. Go away.
Sorry,
all right.
Reggie.
All right, Al, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks a million.
See you, lad. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Take care, Al. Okay, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't think Mayo can get across the line, but we'll see what happens. So that's all we've got time for on this week's show. I want to thank you for listening to us here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvant.ie. I want to thank our very nervous producer today from Mayo, Jane McNamara. I'd like to thank all of our guests who joined us on the show as well today. We'll be back again next week. We want you to take care, stay safe, and have a great weekend. Declan, come on, join in with me. The green and red of Mayo.
Go soft in your old age.